Amanda wouldn't try to hurt me, he told himself. But he would. He knows I love her, and he'd do anything to damage me. He's already taken Amanda away from me. Now he wants to drive me out of the belt and stop me from taking Astro. Son of a bitch wants to ruin me. Diane is right. We've got to move and move fast. Carrot and stick. Abruptly, he sat up straight and ordered the phone to summon his chief of security. The man rapped softly at his office door a few moments later. Come in, Grigor, said Humphreys. Security chief was a new hire, a lean, silent man with dark hair and darker eyes. He wore an ordinary business suit of pale gray, the nondescript costume of a man who preferred to remain in the background, unnoticed, while he noticed everything. He remained standing despite the two comfortable chairs in front of Humphreys's desk. Tilting his own chair back slightly to look up at him, Humphreys said, Grigor, I want the benefit of your thinking on a problem I have. Grigor shifted slightly on his feet. He had just been recruited from an Earth-based corporation that was floundering financially because most of its assets had been destroyed in the greenhouse flooding. He was on probation with Humphreys, and he knew it. Those rock rats out in the belt are getting a bigger and bigger share of their supplies from Helvetia Limited instead of from Humphreys Space Systems, Humphreys said, watching the man closely, curious about how he would respond. Grigor said nothing. His face betrayed no emotion. He listened. I want Humphreys Space Systems to have exclusive control of the rock rat supplies. Grigor just stood there. Unmoving, his eyes revealing nothing. Exclusive control, Humphreys repeated. Do you understand? Grigor's chin dipped in the slightest of nods. What do you think must be done? Humphreys asked.
To gain exclusive control, said Grigor, in a throaty, guttural voice that sounded strained and painful, you must eliminate your competitor.
Yes, but how?
There are many ways. One of them is to use violence. I presume that is why you have asked my opinion.
Raising one hand, Humphreys said sharply, I don't mind violence, but this needs to be done with great discretion. I don't want anyone to suspect that Humphreys Space Systems has anything to do with it. Grigor thought in silence for a few heartbeats.
Then the action must be taken against individual prospectors, rather than Helvetia itself. Eliminate their customers, and the company will shrivel and die.
Humphreys nodded. Yes, he said. Exactly.
It will take some time.
How much time?
A few months, Grigor said.
Perhaps a year. I want it done faster than that, sooner than a year. Grigor closed his eyes briefly, then said,
Then we must be prepared to escalate the violence. First, the individual prospectors, then personnel and facilities on Ceres itself.
Facilities?
Your competitor is constructing an orbital habitat there, is he not?
Humphreys fought to suppress a satisfied grin. Grigor has already been studying the situation, he realized. Good. When his employer failed to reply, Grigor continued.
Stopping the habitat project will help to discredit the man who started it. If nothing else, it will show that he is powerless to protect his own people.
It's got to look accidental, Humphreys insisted. No hint of responsibility laid at my doorstep.
Not to worry, said Grigor.
I never worry, Humphreys snapped. I get even. As Grigor left his office, silent as a wraith, Humphreys thought, carrot and stick. Diane will offer the carrot. Grigor's people will provide the stick.
1 month later.
Ooh, Randy, gushed Cindy. You're so big and hard, added Mindy.
Randall McPherson lay back in the small mountain of pillows while the naked twins stroked his bare skin. Some guys liked sex in microgravity, but Randy had spun up his ship to almost a full terrestrial G for his encounter with the twins. His partner, Dan Fogarty, complained about the fuel cost of spinning up the ship, but Randy had ignored his bleating. Fogarty was known to all the miners as Fatso Fogarty. He had allowed himself to blubber up so shamelessly and living in microgravity most of the time. McPherson spent hours of his spare time in their ship's exercise centrifuge, or had the whole ship spun up to keep his muscles in condition. Fogarty was lucky to have a level-headed man such as McPherson to team with him, in McPherson's opinion. The twins were actually back at Ceres, of course, but the virtual reality system was working pretty well. Hardly a noticeable lag between a request by Randy and a smiling, slinky, caressing response from Cindy and Mindy. So Randy was more than a little irked when Fogarty's voice broke into his three-way fantasy. "There's a bloomin' ship approaching us." "What?" McPherson snapped, sitting up so abruptly that the VR images of the twins were still wriggling sensuously on the pillows, even though he was no longer lying between them. "A ship," Fatso repeated. "They're asking to dock with us." McPherson muttered a string of heartfelt profanity while the twins lay motionless, staring blankly. "Sorry, ladies," he said, pushing himself up off the pillows, feeling half embarrassed, half infuriated. He lifted the VR goggles off and saw the real world, a dreary little compartment on a scruffy clunker of a ship that badly needed a refit and overhaul after 14 months of batting around the belt. Awkwardly peeling off his VR sensor suit and pulling on his coveralls as he made his way up to the bridge, McPherson bellowed, "Fatso, if this is one of your goddamn jokes, I'm gonna wring your neck till I hear chimes." He ducked through the hatch and into the cramped, overheated bridge. Fogarty overflowed the pilot's seat, one hand clenching half a meat pie. Most of the rest of it was spattered over his chins and coverall front. He was globulously lumpy, stretching the faded orange fabric of his coveralls so much that McPherson was reminded of an overripe pumpkin. He smelled overripe, too, and the additional spicy aroma from the meat pie made McPherson's stomach churn. "Reckon I don't smell much better," McPherson told himself, trying to keep an even temper. Fogarty half-turned in the creaking chair and jabbed a thick finger excitedly toward the main display screen. McPherson saw the 2-kilometer-long chunk of rock they had just claimed, dark and lumpy, and a silvery spacecraft that looked too sleek and new to be a prospector's ship. "A mining team," Fogarty half-suggested. "Out here already?" McPherson snapped. "We just sent in our claim. We haven't contacted any miners." "Well, there they are," said Fogarty. "That's not a miner's ship." Fogarty shrugged. "Shall I give him permission to come aboard?" McPherson had to squeeze past his partner's bulk to get into the right-hand seat. "Who in blazes are they? And what are they doing here? With the whole belt to poke into, why are they sticking their noses into our claim?" Fogarty grinned at his partner. "We could ask them." Grumbling, McPherson flicked on the communications channel. "This is the Lady of the Lake. Identify yourselves, please." The screen swirled with color momentarily. Then a darkly bearded man's face took form. He looked vaguely oriental to McPherson. High cheekbones, hooded eyes. "This is Shanidar. We have a box full of video discs that we've viewed so often we can lip-sync the dialogue. Do you have any to trade?" "What have you got?" Fogarty asked eagerly. "How recent are they?" "Private stuff mostly. Muy picante, if you know what I mean. You can't get them through the normal channels. They were brand new when we left Cellini 6 months ago." Before McPherson could reply, Fogarty broke into a dimpled, many-chinned smile. "We can swap you one for one, but our stuff is older." "That's okay," said the bearded man. "It'll be new to us." "What are you doing out here?" McPherson demanded. "We claimed this rock, you know." "We're not prospecting anymore," came the reply. "We've hit our jackpot and made a deal with Humphrey's Space Systems to process the ores. Got our money in the bank. We just thought we'd unload these video discs before we head back home."
"Sure," said Fatso. "Why not?"
McPherson felt uneasy, but he saw the eager look on his partner's fleshy face. After 14 months in the belt, they had barely cleared the payments on their ship. They needed another week at least to negotiate a mining contract with one of the corporations. McPherson had no intention of accepting the first offer they received, and the prices for ores just kept going down. They'd be lucky if they netted enough to live on for 6 months before they had to go out again. "Okay," he said reluctantly. "Come on over and dock at our main airlock." Fogarty nodded happily like a little kid anticipating Christmas.
Amanda thought again about how housekeeping on Ceres, inside Ceres actually, was different.